"Is Harald here?" I asked the steward. "My lord is inside." The steward was offended that I'd not called the Reeve lord. "Then so are we," I said, "and let's Diapa into the hall." The steward flapped at us because custom and courtesy demanded that he seek his lord's permission for us to enter the hall, but I ignored him. A fire burned in the central hearth, and dozens of rushlights stood on the platforms at the hall's edges. Boar spears were stacked against the wall, on which hung a dozen deerskins and a bundle of valuable pine marten pelts. A score of men were in the hall, evidently waiting for supper, and a harpist played at the far end. A pack of hounds rushed to investigate us, and Stiepa beat them off as we walked to the fire to warm ourselves.
"Ale," Stiepa said to the steward.
Harald must have heard the noise of the hounds, for he appeared at a door, leading from the private chamber at the back of the hall. He blinked when he saw us. He had thought the two of us were enemies. Then he had heard that Stiepa was captured, yet here we were, side by side. The hall fell silent as he limped towards us. It was only a slight limp, the result of a spear wound in some battle that had also taken two fingers of his sword hand. "You once chided me," he said, "for carrying weapons into your hall. Yet you bring weapons into mine." "There was no gatekeeper," I said.
"He was having a piss, lord,"
the steward explained.
"There are to be no weapons in hall," Harald insisted.
That was customary. Men get drunk in hall and can do enough damage to each other with the knives we use to cut meat. And drunken men with swords and axes can turn a supper table into a butcher's yard. We gave the steward our weapons, then I hauled off my mail coat and told the steward to hang it on a frame to dry, then have a servant clean its links. Harald formally welcomed us when our weapons were gone. He said the hall was ours, and that we should eat with him as honoured guests. "I would hear your news," he said, beckoning a servant who brought us pots of ale. "Is Odda here?" I demanded.
"The father is, yes, not the son."
I swore. We come here with a message for Elderman Odda, Odda the Younger, only to discover that it was the wounded father, Odda the Elder, who was at Oakmonton. "So where is the son?" I asked. Harald was offended by my brusqueness, but he remained courteous.
"The Elderman is in Axancester."
"Is he besieged there?"
"No."
"And the Danes are in Cridianton?"
"They are."
"And they are besieged?" I knew the answer to that, but wanted to hear Harald admit it.
"No,"
he said. I let the ale pot drop. "We come from the king," I said. I was supposedly speaking to Harald, but I strode down the hall so that the men on the platforms could hear me.
"We come from Alfred," I said, "and Alfred wishes to know why there are Danes in Devonshire. We burned their ships, we slaughtered their shipguards, and we drove them from Sinuit, yet you allow them to live here. Why?"
No one answered. There were no women in the hall, for Harald was a widower who had not remarried, and so the supper guests were all his warriors, or else thanes who led men of their own. Some looked at me with loathing, for my words imputed cowardice to them, while others looked down at the floor. Harald glanced at Stiepa as if seeking the big man's support, but Stiepa just stood by the fire, his savage face showing nothing. I turned back to stare at Harald.
"Why are there Danes in Devonshire?" I demanded.
"Because they are welcome here," a voice said behind me.
I turned to see an old man standing in the door. White hair showed beneath the bandage that swayed his head, and he was so thin and so weak that he had to lean on the doorframe for support. At first, I did not recognize him, for when I had last spoken to him, he had been a big man, well-built and vigorous. But Odda the Elder had taken an axe blow to the skull at Sinuit, and he should have died from such a wound. Yet somehow he had lived. And here he was, though now he was skeletal, pale, haggard and feeble.
"They are here,"
Odda said,
"because they are welcome. as are you, Lord Uhtred, and you, Stiapa.
A woman was tending Odder the Elder. She had tried to pull him away from the door and take him back to his bed, but now she edged past him into the hall and stared at me. Then, seeing me, she did what she had done the very first time she saw me. She did what she had done when she came to marry me. She burst into tears. It was Mildreth. Mildreth was robed like a nun, in a pale grey dress, belted with rope, over which she wore a large wooden cross. She had a close-fitting grey bonnet, from which strands of her fair hair escaped. She stared at me, burst into tears, made the sign of the cross, and vanished. A moment later, Odder the Elder followed her, too frail to stand any longer, and the door closed.
"You are indeed welcome here,"
Harald said, echoing Odder's words.
"But why are the Danes welcome here?" I asked.
"Because Odder the Younger had made a truce. Harald explained it as we ate. No one in this part of Devonshire had heard how Svein's ships had been burned at Sinuit. They only knew that Svein's men, and their women and children, had marched south, burning and plundering. And Odder the Younger had taken his troops to Exoncester, and he had prepared for a siege. But instead, Svein had offered to talk. The Danes quite suddenly had stopped raiding. Instead, they'd settled in Cridianton, and sent an embassy to Exoncester, and Svein and Odder had made their private peace.
"We sell them horses," Harald said, "and they pay well for them. 20 shillings a stallion, 15 a mare."
"You sell them horses," I said flatly.
"So they will go away,"
Harald explained. Servants threw a big birch log onto the fire. Sparks exploded outwards, scattering the hounds who lay just beyond the ring of hearth stones.
"How many men does Svein lead?" I asked.
"Many," Harald said.
800?
I asked.
9?
Harald shrugged.
"They came in 24 ships," I went on. "Only 24, so how many men can he have?"
"No more than 1,000, and we killed a few, and others must have died in the winter."
"We think he has 800, Harald said reluctantly.
"And how many men in the field?"
2,000?
"Of which only 400 are seasoned warriors," Harald said.
That was probably true. Most men of the field are farmers, while every Dane is a sword warrior. But Svein would never have pitted his 800 men against 2,000. Not because he feared losing, but because he feared that in gaining victory he would lose 100 men. That was why he had stopped plundering and made his truce with Odder. Because in southern Devonshire he could recover from his defeat at Sinuit. His men could rest, feed, make weapons and get horses. Svein was husbanding his men and making them stronger.
"Well, it was not my choice," Harald said defensively.
"The Elderman ordered it."
"And the king," I retorted, "ordered Odder to drive Svein out of Devonshire."
"What do we know of the king's orders?"
Harald asked bitterly. And it was my turn to give him news, to tell how Alfred had escaped Guthrum and was in the great swamp.
"And sometime after Easter," I said, "we shall gather the Shire Feards, and we shall cut Guthrum into pieces."
I stood.
"There will be no more horses sold to Svein."
I said it loudly, so that every man in the big hall could hear me.
"But,"
Harald began, then shook his head.
He had doubtless been about to say that Odder the Younger, Elderman of Devonshire, had ordered the horses to be sold. But his voice trailed away.
"What are the king's orders?" I demanded of Stiapa.
"No more horses!"
he thundered. There was silence, until Harald irritably gestured at the harpist, who struck a chord and began playing a melancholy tune. Someone began singing, but no one joined in, and his voice trailed away.
"I must look to the sentinels," Harald said.
And he threw me an inquisitive look, which I took as an invitation to join him, And so I buckled on my swords and then walked with him down Oakmunton's long street to where three spearmen stood guard beside a wooden hut. Harald talked to them for a moment, then led me further east, away from the light of the sentinel's fire. A moon silvered the valley, lighting the empty road until the track vanished among trees.
"I have 30 fighting men,"
Harald said suddenly. He was telling me he was too weak to fight. "How many men does Odda have in Exencester?" I asked.
100? 120?
The fear should have been raised.
"I had no orders," Harald said.
"But did you seek any?"
"Of course I did."
He was angry with me now. "I told Odda we should drive Svein away. But he wouldn't listen.
Did he tell you the king ordered the feared raised?"
"No." Harald paused, staring down the moonlit road. "We heard nothing of Alfred, except that he'd been defeated and was hiding, and we heard the Danes were all across Wessex, and that more were gathering in Mercia. Odda didn't think to attack Svein when he landed.
He thought to protect himself," Harald said,
"and sent me to the Tamer." The Tamer was the river which divided Wessex from Cornwallum.
"The Britons are quiet?" I asked.
"Their priests are telling them not to fight us."
"But priests or no priests," I said, "they'll cross the river if the Danes look like winning."
"Aren't they winning already?" Harald asked bitterly.
"We're still free men," I said.
He nodded at that. Behind us in the town a dog began howling, and he turned as if the noise indicated trouble, but the howling stopped with a sharp yelp. He kicked a stone in the road.
"Svein frightens me," he admitted suddenly.
"Well, he's a frightening man," I agreed.
"He's clever," Harald said.
"Clever, strong, and savage."
"A Dane," I said dryly.
"A ruthless man," Harald went on.
"He is," I agreed.
"And do you think that after you have fed him, supplied him with horses and given him shelter, he'll leave you alone?"
"No," he said.
"But Odda believes that."
Then Odda was a fool. He was nursing a wolf cub that would tear into shreds when it was strong enough.
"Why didn't Svein march north to join Guthrum?" I asked.
"No, he wouldn't know."
But I knew.
Guthrum had been in England for years now. He had tried to take Wessex before and he'd failed. But now, on the very brink of success, he had paused. Guthrum the Unlucky, he was called, and I suspected he had not changed. He was wealthy, led many men, but he was cautious. Svein, though, came from the Norsemen's settlements in Ireland, and was a very different creature. He was younger than Guthrum, less wealthy than Guthrum, and led fewer men, but he was undoubtedly the better warrior. Now, bereft of his ships, he was weakened. But he had persuaded Odda the Younger to give him refuge, and he gathered his strength, so that when he did meet Guthrum, he would not be a defeated leader in need of help, but a spear-dane of power. Svein, I thought, was a far more dangerous man than Guthrum, and Odda the Younger was only making him more dangerous. "Tomorrow," I said, "we must start raising the feared. Those are the king's orders." Harald nodded. I couldn't see his face in the darkness, but I sensed he was not happy. Yet he was a sensible man, and must have known that Svein had to be driven out of the Shire.
"I shall send the messages," he said. "But Odda might stop the feared assembling. He's made his truce with Svein, and he won't want me breaking it. Folk will obey him before they obey me."
"And what of his father?" I asked.
"Will they obey him?"
"They will," he said.
"But he's a sick man. You saw that. It's a miracle he lives at all."
"Well, maybe because my wife nurses him."
"Yes,"
he said, and fell silent.
There was something odd in the air now, something unexpressed, a discomfort. Your wife nurses him well, he finished awkwardly. He's her godfather, I said. So he is. It's good to see her, I said. Not because I meant it, but because it was the proper thing to say, and I could think of nothing else. And it will be good to see my son, I added with more warmth. Your son, Harald said flatly. He's here, isn't he? Yes. Harald flinched. He turned away to look at the moon, and I thought he would say no more, but then he summoned his courage and looked back to me. Your son, Lord Uhtred, he said, is in the churchyard. It took a few heartbeats for me to make sense, and then it did not make any sense at all, but left me confused. I touched my hammer amulet. In the churchyard. It is not my place to tell you. But you will tell me, I said, and my voice sounded like Stiapa's growl. Harald stared at the moon-touched river, silver-white beneath the black trees. Your son died, he said. He waited for my response, but I neither moved nor spoke. He choked to death. Choked. A pebble, Harald said. He was just a baby. He must have picked the pebble up and swallowed it. A pebble? I asked. A woman was with him, but... Harald's voice tailed away. She tried to save him, but she could do nothing. He died. On St. Vincent's Day, I said. You knew? No, I said. I didn't know. But St. Vincent's Day had been the day when Isolde drew Alfred's son, the Aelfling Edward, through the earth. And somewhere, Isolde had told me, a child must die so that the king's heir, the Aelfling, could live. And it had been my child. Uhtred the Younger, whom I'd hardly known. Edward had been given breath, and Uhtred had twitched and fought and gasped and died. I'm sorry, Harald said. It was not my place to tell you, but you needed to know before you saw Meldrith again. She hates me, I said bleakly. Yes, he said, she does. He paused. I thought she would go mad with grief, but God has preserved her. She would like... Like what? To join the sisters at Cridianton, when the Danes leave. They have a nunnery there, a small house. I didn't care what Meldrith did. And my son is buried here. Under the yew tree. He turned and pointed. Beside the church. So let him stay there, I thought. Let him rest in his short grave to wait the chaos of the world's ending. Tomorrow, I said, we raise the feared. Because there was a kingdom to save. Priests were summoned to Harald's hall, and the priests wrote the summons for the feared. Most thanes could not read, and many of their priests would probably struggle to decipher the few words, but the messengers would tell them what the parchment said. They were to arm their men and bring them to Oakmunton, and the wax seal on the summons was the authority for those orders. The seal showed Odda the Elder's badge of a stag. It will take a week, Harald warned me, for most of the fear to reach here, and the Elderman will try to stop it happening at all. And what will he do? Tell the Thanes to ignore it, I suppose. And Svein? What will he do? Try to kill us? And he has 800 men who can be here tomorrow, I said. And I have 30 men, Harald said bleakly. But we do have a fortress, I said.
pointing to the limestone ridge with its palisade.
I did not doubt that the Danes would come. By summoning the feared, we threatened their safety, and Svein was not a man who would take a threat lightly. And so while the messages were carried north and south, the townsfolk were told to take their valuables up to the fort beside the river. Some men were set to strengthening the palisade. Others took livestock up onto the moor, so the beasts could not be taken by the Danes. And Stiapa went to every nearby settlement and demanded that men of fighting age go to Okmunton with any weapon they possessed, so that by that afternoon the fort was manned by over 80 men. Few were warriors. Most had no weapons other than an axe, but from the foot of the hill they looked formidable enough. Women carried food and water to the fort, and most of the town reckoned to sleep up there despite the rain, for fear that the Danes would come in the night. Odd the Elder refused to go to the fort. He was too sick, he said, and too feeble. And if he was supposed to die, then he would die in Harald's hall. Harald and I tried to persuade him, but he would not listen.
"Mildreth can go,"
he said.
"No,"
she said. She sat by Odd's bed, her hands clutched tight under the sleeves of her grey robe. She stared at me. Challenge in her eyes, daring me to give her an order to abandon Odder and go to the fortress. "I'm sorry," I said to her.
"Sorry?"
"About our son."
"You were not a father to him,"
she accused me. Her eyes glistened.
"You wanted him to be a Dane. You wanted him to be a pagan. You didn't even care for his soul."
"I cared for him," I said. But she ignored that. I had not sounded convincing even to myself.
"His soul is safe," Harald said gently. "He is in the Lord Jesus' arms. He is happy."
Mildreth looked at him, and I saw how Harald's words had comforted her, though she still began crying. She caressed her wooden cross, then Odder the Elder reached out and patted her arm. "If the Danes come, Lord," I said to him, "I shall send men for you." I turned then and went from the sick room. I could not cope with Mildreth crying, or the thought of a dead son. Such things are difficult, much more difficult than making war, and so I buckled on my swords, picked up my shield, and put on my splendid wolf-crested helmet, so that when Harald came from Odder's chamber, he checked to see me standing like a warlord by his hearth. "If we make a big fire at the eastern end of town," I said, "we'll see the Danes come. It will give us time to carry Lord Odder to the fort." "Yes." He looked up at the great rafters of his hall, and perhaps he was thinking that he would never see it thus again, for the Danes would come and the hall would burn. He made the sign of the cross. "Fate is inexorable," I told him. What else was there to say? The Danes might come, the hall might burn, but they were small things in the balance of a kingdom, and so I went to order the fire that would illuminate the eastern road. But the Danes did not come that night. It rained softly all through the darkness, so that in the morning the folk in the fort were wet, cold, and unhappy. Then, in the dawn, the first men of the feared arrived. It might take days for the farther parts of the Shire to receive their summons, and to arm men and dispatch them to Okmunton. But the nearer places sent men straight away, so that by late morning there were close to 300 beneath the fort. No more than 70 of those could be called warriors, men who had proper weapons, shields, and at least a leather coat. The rest were farm labourers, with hoes or sickles or axes. Harald sent foraging parties to find grain. It was one thing to gather a force, quite another to feed it, and none of us knew how long we would have to keep the men assembled. If the Danes did not come to us, then we would have to go to them, and force them from Cridianton. And for that, we would need the whole feared of Devonshire. Odder the Younger, I thought, would never allow that to happen. Nor did he.
For as the rain ended and the noontime prayers were said, Odda himself came to Oakmonton, and he did not come alone, but rode with 60 of his warriors in chainmail and as many Danes in their war glory. The sun came out as they appeared from the eastern trees, and it shone on mail and on spear points, on bridle chains and stirrup irons, on polished helmets and bright shield bosses. They spread into the pastures on either side of the road and advanced on Oakmonton in a wide line, and at its centre were two standards. One, the black stag, was the banner of Devonshire, while the other was a Danish triangle and displayed the white horse. "There'll be no fight," I told Harold. "There won't. Not enough of them. Svein can't afford to lose men, so he's come to talk. I don't want to meet them here," he gestured at the fort. "We should be in the hall." He ordered that the best armed men should go down to the town, and there we filled the muddy street outside the hall, as Odda and the Danes came from the east. The horsemen had to break their line to enter the town, making a column instead, and the column was led by three men. Odda was in the centre, and he was flanked by two Danes. One of them Svein, of the White Horse. Svein looked magnificent, a silver-white warrior. He rode a white horse, wore a white woolen cloak, and his mail and boar-snouted helmet had been scrubbed with sand until they glowed silver in the watery sunlight. His shield bore a silvered boss, around which a white horse had been painted. The leather of his bridle, saddle, and scabbard had been bleached pale. He saw me, but showed no recognition, just looked along the line of men barring the street, and seemed to dismiss them as useless. His banner of the white horse was carried by the second horseman, who had the same darkened face as his master, a face hammered by sun and snow, ice and wind.
"Harald?"
Odda the younger had ridden ahead of the two Danes. He was sleek as ever, gleaming in mail and with a black cloak draping his horse's rump. He smiled as though he welcomed the meeting.
"You have summoned the feared. Why?"
"Because the king commanded it," Harald said. Odda still smiled. He glanced at me, appeared not to notice I was present, then looked to the hall door where Stiapa had just appeared. The big man had been talking with Odda the elder, and now he stared at Odda the Younger with astonishment.
"Stiapa,"
Odda the Younger said.
"Loyal Stiapa! How good to see you!"
"You too, Lord."
"My faithful Stiapa,"
Odda said, plainly pleased to be reunited with his erstwhile bodyguard.
"Come here,"
he commanded. And Stiapa pushed past us and knelt in the mud by Odda's horse, and reverently kissed his master's boot.
"Stand,"
Odda said.
"Stand. With you beside me, Stiapa, who can hurt us?"
"No one, Lord."
"No one,"
Odda repeated, then smiled at Harald.
"You said the king ordered the feared summoned? There is a king in Wessex?"
"There is a king in Wessex," Harald said firmly.
"There is a king skulking in the marshes,"
Odda said, loudly enough for all Harald's men to hear.
"He is the king of frogs, perhaps, a monarch of eels. What kind of king is that?"
I answered for Harald, only I answered in Danish. "A king who ordered me to burn Svein's boats, which I did. All but one, which I kept and still have." Svein took off his boar-snouted helmet and looked at me, and again there was no recognition. His gaze was like that of the great serpent of death that lies at the foot of Yggdrasil.
"I burned the white horse," I told him, "and warmed my hands on its flames."
Svein spat for answer.
"And the man beside you,"
I spoke to Odda now, using English,
"is the man who burned your church at Sinuit. The man who killed the monks, the man who is cursed in heaven, in hell, and in this world. Yet now he is your ally? Does that goat-turd speak for you?"
Odda demanded of Harald. These men speak for me, Harald said, indicating the warriors behind him.
But by what right do you raise the feared?
Odder asked. I am Elderman. And who made you Elderman? Harald asked. He paused, but Odder gave no answer.
The King of Frogs?
Harald asked.
The Monarch of Eels? If Alfred has no authority, then you have lost yours with his.
Odder was plainly surprised by Harald's defiance, and he was probably irritated by it, but he gave no sign of annoyance. He just went on smiling.
I do believe, he said to Harald, that you have misunderstood what happens in Devonshire.
Then explain to me, Harald said.
I shall,
Odder said.
But we shall talk with ale and food.
He looked up at the sky. The brief sun was gone behind cloud, and a chill wind was gusting the thatch of the street.
And we should talk under a roof,
Odder suggested,
before it rains again.
There were matters to be agreed first, though that was done soon enough. The Danish horsemen would withdraw to the eastern end of the town, while Harald's men would retreat to the fort. Each side could take 10 men into the hall, and all of those men were to leave their weapons heaped in the street, where they were to be guarded by 6 Danes and as many Saxons. Harald's servants brought ale, bread and cheese. There was no meat offered, for it was the season of Lent. Benches were placed at either side of the hearth. Svein crossed to our side of the fire as the benches were brought, and at long last deigned to recognize me.
"It was really you who burned the ships?" he asked.
"Including yours."
"The White Horse took a year and a day to build," he said. "And she was made of trees, from which we'd hung Odin's sacrifices. She was a good ship."
"She's all ash on the seashore now," I said.
"Then one day I shall repay you," he retorted.
And though he spoke mildly, there was a world of threat in his voice.
"And you were wrong,"
he added.
"Wrong?"
I asked.
"Wrong to burn your ships?" "There was no altar of gold at Sinuit."
"Where you burn the monks?" I said.
"I burned them alive," he agreed, "and warmed my hands on their flames."
He smiled at that memory.
"You could join me again," he suggested. "I shall forgive you of burning my ship, and you and I can fight side by side once more. I need good men. I pay well."
"I'm sworn to Alfred."
"Ah," he nodded. "So be it. Enemies." He went back to Odder's benches.
"You would see your father before we talk?"
Harald asked Odder, gesturing towards the door at the hall's end.
"I shall see him,"
Odder said,
"when our friendship is repaired. And you and I must be friends."
He said the last words loudly, and they prompted men to sit on the benches.
"You summoned the feared,"
he spoke to Harald,
"because Uhtred brought you orders from Alfred."
"He did."
"Then you did the right thing,"
Odder said,
"and that is to be praised."
Svein, listening to the translation that was provided by one of his own men, stared flatly at us.
"And now you will do the right thing again,"
Odder continued,
"and send the feared home."
"The king has ordered otherwise," Harald said.
"What king?"
Odder asked.
"Alfred, who else?"
"But there are other kings in Wessex,"
Odder said.
"Guthrum is king of East Anglia, and he is in Wessex, and some say Æthelwold will be crowned king before the summer."
"Æthelwold?" Harald asked.
"You'd not heard?"
Odder asked.
"Wulfhere of Wiltonshire has sided with Guthrum, and both Guthrum and Wulfhere have said Æthelwold will be king of Wessex. And why not? Is not Æthelwold the son of our last king? Should he not be king?"
Harald, uncertain, looked at me.
He'd not heard of Wulfhere's defection, and it was hard news for him. I nodded.
"Wulfhere is with Guthrum," I said.
"So Æthelwold, son of Æthelred, will be king in Wessex,"
Otto said.
"And Æthelwold has thousands of swords at his command. Aelfrig of Kent is with the Danes. There are Danes in Lundeen, on Skipig, and on the walls of Contwaraburg. All northern Wessex is in Danish hands. There are Danes here in Devonshire. What, tell me, is Alfred king of?"
"Of Wessex," I said. Odder ignored me, looking at Harald.
"Alfred has our oaths," Harald said stubbornly.
"And I have your oath,"
Odder reminded him. He sighed.
"God knows, Harald, no one was more loyal to Alfred than I. Yet he failed us. The Danes came, and the Danes are here. And where is Alfred? Hiding. In a few weeks their armies will march. They will come from Mercia, from Lundeen, from Kent. Their fleets will be off our coast. Armies of Danes and fleets of Vikings. What will you do then?"
Harald shifted uneasily.
"What will you do?" he retorted.
Odder gestured at Svein, who, the question translated, spoke for the first time. I interpreted for Harald. "Wessex is doomed," Svein said in his grating voice. "By summer it will be swarming with Danes, with men newly come from the north, and the only Saxons who will live will be those men who aid the Danes now. Those who fight against the Danes," Svein said, "will be dead, and their women will be whores, and their children will be slaves, and their homes will be lost, and their names shall be forgotten, like the smoke of an extinguished fire."
"And Æthelwold will be king?"
I asked scornfully.
"You think we will all bow to a whoring drunkard?"
Odder shook his head.
"The Danes are generous,"
he said. And he drew back his cloak, and I saw that he wore 6 golden arm rings.
"To those who helped them," he said. "There will be the rewards of land, wealth, and honour."
"And Æthelwold will be king?" I asked again.
Odder again gestured at Svein. The big Dane seemed bored, but he stirred himself.
"It is right," he said, "that Saxons should be ruled by a Sax. We shall make a king here."
I scorned that. They had made Saxon kings in Northumbria and in Mercia, and those kings were feeble, leashed to the Danes. And then I understood what Svein meant, and I laughed aloud.
"Ha! He's promised you the throne,"
I accused Odder.
"I've heard more sense from a pig's fart," Odder retorted.
But I knew I was right. Æthelwold was Guthrum's candidate for the throne of Wessex, but Svein was no friend of Guthrum, and would want his own Saxon as a king. Odder.
"King Odder,"
I said jeeringly, then spat into the fire. Odder would have killed me for that, but we met under the terms of a truce, and so he forced himself to ignore the insult. He looked at Harald.
"You have a choice, Harald,"
he said.
"You can die, or you can live."
Harald was silent. He'd not known about Wulfhere, and the news had appalled him. Wulfhere was the most powerful elderman in Wessex, and if he thought Alfred was doomed, then what was Harald to think? I could see the Shire Reeve's uncertainty. His decency wanted him to declare loyalty to Alfred, but Odder had suggested that nothing but death would follow such a choice. Harald began, then fell silent, unable to say what he thought, for he did not know his own mind.
"The feared is raised,"
I spoke for him,
"at the king's orders, and the king's orders are to drive the Danes from Devonshire."
Odder spat into the fire for answer.
"Svein has been defeated," I said. "His ships are burned. He's like a whipped dog, and you give him comfort."
Svein, when that was translated, gave me a look like the stroke of a whip.
"Svein," I went on, as though he were not present, "must be driven back to Guthrum."
"You have no authority here,"
Odder said.
"I have Alfred's authority," I said, and a written order telling you to drive Svein from your shire. Alfred's orders mean nothing, Otto said, and you croak like a swamp frog. He turned to Stiepa. You have unfinished business with Uhtred.
Stiepa looked uncertain for a heartbeat, then understood what his master meant.
Yes, lord, he said.
Then finish it now.
Finish what now? Harald asked.
Your king,
Otto said the last word sarcastically, ordered Stiepa and Uhtred to fight to the death, yet both live. So your king's orders have not been obeyed.
Oh, there is a truce, Harald protested.
Either Uhtred stops interfering in the affairs of Devonshire, Otto said forcefully, or I shall have Devonshire kill Uhtred. You want to know who is right? Alfred or me? You want to know who will be king in Wessex, Ethelwald or Alfred? Then put it to the test, Harald. Let Stiepa and Uhtred finish their fight and see which man God favours. If Uhtred wins, then I shall support you. And if he loses...
He smiled. He had no doubt who would win. Harald stayed silent.
I looked at Stiepa, and, as on the first time I met him, saw nothing on his face.
He had promised to protect me, but that was before he had been reunited with his master. The Danes looked happy. Why should they mind two Saxons fighting? Harald, though, still hesitated, and then the weary, feeble voice sounded from the doorway at the back of the hall.
Let them fight, Harald. Let them fight.
Otto the Elder, swathed in a wolfskin blanket, stood at the door. He held a crucifix.
Let them fight, he said again, and God will guide the victor's arm.
Harald looked at me. I nodded. I did not want to fight, but a man cannot back down from combat. What was I to do? Say that to expect God to indicate a course of action through a duel was nonsense? To appeal to Harald? To claim that everything Otto had said was wrong and that Alfred would win? If I had refused to fight, I was granting the argument to Otto. And in truth, he had half convinced me that Alfred was doomed. And Harald, I'm sure, was wholly convinced. Yet there was more than mere pride making me fight in the hall that day. There was a belief, deep in my soul, that somehow Alfred would survive. I didn't like him. I did not like his god. But I believe fate was on his side. So I nodded again, this time to Stiepa. I do not want to fight you, I said to him, but I've given an oath to Alfred, and my sword says he will win, and that Danish blood will dung our fields. Stiepa said nothing. He just flexed his huge arms, then waited, as one of Odda's men went outside and returned with two swords. No shields, just swords. He had taken a pair of blades at random from the pile, and he offered them to Stiepa first, who shook his head, indicating that I should have the choice. I closed my eyes, groped, and took the first hilt that I touched. It was a heavy sword, weighted towards its tip, a slashing weapon, not a piercing blade, and I knew I had chosen wrong. Stiepa took the other and scythed it through the air so that the blade sang. Svein, who had betrayed little emotion so far, looked impressed, while Otto the Younger smiled.
You can put the sword down,
he told me,
and thus yield the argument to me.
Instead, I walked to the clear space beside the hearth. I had no intention of attacking Stiepa, but would let him come to me. I felt weary and resigned. Fate is inexorable.
For my sake, Otto the Elder spoke behind me. Make it fast.
Yes, lord, Stiepa said.
And he took a step towards me, and then turned, as fast as a striking snake, and his blade whipped in a slash that took Otto the Younger's throat. The sword was not as sharp as it could have been, so that the blow drove Odda down, but it also ripped his gullet open so that blood spurted a blade's length into the air, then splashed into the fire where it hissed and bubbled. Odda was on the floor rushes now, his legs twitching, his hands clutching at his throat that still pumped blood. He made a gargling noise, turned on his back, and went into a spasm, so that his heels drummed against the floor. And then, just as Stiappa stepped forward to finish him, he gave a last jerk and was dead. Stiappa drove the sword into the floor, leaving it quivering there.
"Alfred rescued me," he announced to the hall. "Alfred took me from the Danes. Alfred is my king."
"And he has our oaths,"
Odda the Elder added.
"And my son had no business making peace with the pagans."
The Danes stepped back. Svein glanced at me, for I was still holding a sword. Then he looked at the boar spears leaning against the wall, judging whether he could snatch one before I attacked him. I lowered the blade.
"We have a truce,"
Harald said loudly. "We have a truce," I told Svein in Danish. Svein spat on the bloody rushes. Then he and his standard-bearer took another cautious backwards pace.
"But tomorrow," Harald said, "there will be no truce, and we shall come to kill you."
The Danes rode from Oak Mountain. The next day they also went from Cridianton. They could have stayed if they wished. There were more than enough of them to defend Cridianton and make trouble in the Shire. But Svein knew he would be besieged, and, man by man, worn down until he had no force at all. And so he went north, going to join Guthrum. And I rode to Oxton. The land had never looked more beautiful. The trees were hazed with green, and bullfinches were feasting on the first tight fruit buds, while anemones, stitchwort, and white violets glowed in sheltered spots. Lambs ran from the buck hares in the pastures. The sun shimmered on the white sea-reach of the Usk, and the sky was full of lark-song, beneath which the foxes took lambs. Magpies and jays feasted on other birds' eggs, and ploughmen impaled crows at the edges of the fields to ensure a good harvest.
"There'll be butter soon,"
a woman told me. She really wanted to know if I was returning to the estate, but I was not. I was saying farewell. There were slaves living there, doing their jobs, and I assured them Mildreth would appoint a steward sooner or later. Then I went to the hall, and I dug beside the post, and found my hoard untouched. The Danes had not come to Oxton. Werken, the sly priest of Exonminster, heard I was at the hall, and rode a donkey up to the estate. He assured me he had kept a watchful eye on the place, and doubtless he wanted a reward. "It belongs to Mildreth now," I told him.
"The Lady Mildreth? She lives?"
"She lives," I said curtly. "But her son is dead."
"God rest his poor soul,"
Werken said, making the sign of the cross. I was eating a scrap of ham, and he looked at it hungrily, knowing I broke the rules of Lent. He said nothing, but I knew he was cursing me for a pagan. "And the Lady Mildreth," I went on, "would live a chaste life now. She says she will join the sisters in Cridianton."
"There are no sisters in Cridianton," Werken said. "They're all dead. The Danes saw to that before they left."
"Other nuns will settle there," I said. Not that I cared, for the fate of a small nunnery was none of my business. Oxton was no longer my business. The Danes were my business, and the Danes had gone north, and I would follow them. For that was my life. That spring I was 21 years old, and for half my life I had been with armies. I was not a farmer. I watched the slaves tearing the couch grass from the home fields, and knew the tasks of farming bored me. I was a warrior, and I had been driven from my home of Bebbanburg to the southern edge of England,
and I think I knew, as Werken babbled on about how he had guarded the storehouses through the winter, that I was now going north again. Ever north. Back home.
"You lived off these storehouses all winter," I accused the priest.
"I watched them all winter, Lord."
"And you got fat as you watched," I said. I climbed into my saddle. Behind me were two bags, ripe with money, and they stayed there as I rode to Exoncester and found Stiapa in the Swan. Next morning, with six other warriors from Elderman Odder's guard, we rode north. Our way was marked by pillars of smoke, for Svein was burning and plundering as he went. But we had done what Alfred had wanted us to do. We had driven Svein back to Guthrum, so that now the two largest Danish armies were united. If Alfred had been stronger, he might have left them separate and marched against each in turn. But Alfred knew he had only one chance to take back his kingdom, and that was to win one battle. He had to overwhelm all the Danes and destroy them in one blow, and his weapon was an army that existed only in his head. He had sent demands that the feared of Wessex would be summoned after Easter and before Pentecost, but no one knew whether it would actually appear. Perhaps we would ride from the swamp and find no one at the meeting place, or perhaps the feared would come, and there would be too few men. The truth was that Alfred was too weak to fight, but to wait longer would only make him weaker. So he had to fight, or lose his kingdom. So we would fight.
Chapter 11.
"You will have many sons,"
Isolt told me. It was dark, though a half-moon was hazed by a mist. Somewhere to the northeast, a dozen fires burned in the hills, evidence that a strong Danish patrol was watching the swamp.
"But I'm sorry about Uhtred," she said.
I wept for him then. I do not know why the tears had taken so long to come, but suddenly I was overwhelmed by the thought of his helplessness, his sudden smile, and the pity of it all. Both my half-brothers and my half-sister had died when they were babies, and I do not remember my father crying, though perhaps he did. I do remember my stepmother shrieking in grief, and how my father, disgusted by the sound, had gone hunting with his hawks and hounds.
"I saw three kingfishers yesterday,"
Isolt said. Tears were running down my cheeks, blurring the misted moon. I said nothing.
"Hild says the blue of the kingfisher's feathers is for the Virgin, and the red is for Christ's blood."
"And what do you say?"
"That your son's death is my doing."
"Weird bith fool arid," I said. "Fate is fate. It cannot be changed or cheated. Alfred had insisted I marry Mildred so I would be tied to Wessex and would put roots deep into its rich soil. But I already had roots in Northumbria. Roots twisted into the rock of Bebbanburg. And perhaps my son's death was a sign from the gods that I could not make a new home. Fate wanted me to go to my northern stronghold, and until I reached Bebbanburg I would be a wanderer. Men fear wanderers, for they have no rules. The Danes came as strangers, rootless and violent, and that, I thought, was why I was always happier in their company. Alfred could spend hours worrying about the righteousness of a law, whether it concerned the fate of orphans or the sanctity of boundary markers. And he was right to worry, because folk cannot live together without law, or else every straying cow would lead to bloodshed. But the Danes hacked through the law with swords. It was easier that way. Though once they had settled a land, they started to make their own laws. "It was not your fault," I said. "You don't command fate."
"Hild says There is no such thing as fate,
Isolde said. Then Hild is wrong.
There is only the will of God,
Isolde said.
And if we obey that, we go to heaven.
And if we choose not to, I said, isn't that fate?
That's the devil,
she said.
We are sheep, Uhtred, and we choose our shepherd, a good one or a bad one.
I thought Hild must have soured Isolde with Christianity, but I was wrong. It was a priest who had come to Æthelingaeg while I had been in Devonshire who had filled her head with his religion. He was a British priest from Defid, a priest who spoke Isolde's native tongue, and also knew both English and Danish. I was ready to hate him, as I hated Brother Asser. But Father Peelig stumbled into our hut next morning, booming that he had found 5 goose eggs and was dying of hunger. Dying! That's what I am! Dying of starvation! He looked pleased to see me. You're the famous Uhtred, eh? And Isolde tells me you hate Brother Asser. Well, then you're a friend of mine. Why Abraham doesn't take Asser to his bosom, I don't know. Except maybe Abraham doesn't want the little bastard clinging to his bosom. I wouldn't. It would be like suckling a serpent, it would. Did I say I was hungry? He was twice my age, and a big man. Big-bellied and big-hearted. His hair stuck out in ungovernable clumps. He had a broken nose, only 4 teeth, and a broad smile. When I was a child, he taught me, ever such a little child, I used to eat mud. Can you believe that? Do Saxons eat mud? Of course they do. And I thought, I don't want to eat mud. Mud is for toads, it is. So eventually I became a priest, and you know why? Because I never saw a hungry priest. Never. Did you ever see a hungry priest? Nor me. All this tumbled out without any introduction. Then he spoke earnestly to Isolde in her own tongue, and I was sure he was pouring Christianity into her. But then he translated for me. I'm telling her that you can make a marvellous dish with goose eggs. Break them up, stir them well, and add a little crumbled cheese. So, Devonshire is safe. Oh, unless the Danes send a fleet, I said. Guthrum has that in mind, Peelig said. He wants the Danes in Lundeen to send their ships to the south coast. You know that? I do, indeed. I do, indeed. He told me. I've just spent 10 days in Sippenham. I speak Danish, see, because I'm clever, and so I was an ambassador for my king. How about that? Me, who used to eat mud, an ambassador. Crumble the cheese finer, my love. That's right. I had to discover, you see, how much money Guthrum would pay us to bring our spearmen over the hills and start skewering Saxons. Now that's a fine ambition for a Briton, skewering Saxons, but the Danes are pagans, and God knows we can't have pagans loose in the world. Why not? It's just a fancy of mine, he said. Just a fancy. He stabbed his finger into a tiny pot of butter, then licked it. It isn't really sour, he told Isolde. Not very, so stir it in. He grinned at me. What happens when you put 2 bulls to a herd of cows? One bull dies. There you are. Gods are the same. Which is why we don't want pagans here. We're cows, and the gods are bulls. So we get humped. He laughed. Theology's difficult. Anyway, God is my bull, so here I am, telling the Saxons about Guthrum. Did Guthrum offer you money? I asked. He offered me the kingdom of the world. He offered me gold, silver, amber, and jet. He even offered me women, or boys if I had that taste, which I don't. And I didn't believe a single promise he made. Not that it mattered. The Britons aren't going to fight anyway. God doesn't want us to. No. My embassy was all a pretense. Brother Asser sent me. He wanted me to spy on the Dane Sea, then tell Alfred what I saw, so that's what I'm doing. Asser sent you. He wants Alfred to win. Not because he loves the Saxons. Even Brother Asser isn't that curdled, but because he loves God. And will Alfred win? If God has anything to do with it, yes, Peelig said cheerfully. Then gave a shrug. But the Danes are strong in men. A big army. But they're not happy. I can tell you that. And they're all hungry. Not starving, mind you, but
pulling their belts tighter than they'd like. And now Svein's there, so there'll be even less food. Their own fault, of course. Too many men in Sipanam, and too many slaves. They have